In tech we trust. It's the people in charge we're not sure about.
So here we are, episode 001. The first and inaugural episode of the In Tech We Trust podcast, where we eat, sleep, breathe enterprise technology. In fact, we love it so much that we're going to go out of our way every week to record ourselves talking about it. Now then, my name's Nigel Poulton, and I am one of your hosts. When I say one of your hosts, well, that's because I'm joined by... I don't know, is there a word for a group of techies? Like there is, you know, you say a pack of dogs, something like that. What would you call a group of techies, guys?
A murder of techies.
A murder of techies. There we go, that'll do for me then. So I'm surrounded by a murder of techies.
I like Twister better. Come on.
Twister? I was thinking cluster, but that's like pretty boring, right?
Gaggle. A clustered twister?
A clustered twister. Anyway, I'm joined by a bunch of, I guess, top technical talent in some respects, who are going to form sort of a pool of co-hosts. Basically, we want to do a weekly show, but that's a huge old commitment, right? So by having four or five potential co-hosts in a pool, hopefully we can make it easier to crank out weekly content. We're not going to have everybody on every show, but enough of that. Let's do some intros before we start talking about technology. And I'm going to just look at my Skype screen and go from left to right. Farley, you're actually on the left this time, so you want to give us a quick intro?
No, it's great to be back podcasting. That's all I got to say.
That it? Come on, Mark, where are you right now? Because you're at some kind of company that doesn't even have a product yet, right?
Yeah, we barely exist. It's Quadra Software. There are eight people. We've got alpha level code. We're getting ready to show it to some customers. That's what we're doing there. And that gives me enough time in the afternoon to sneak away and record podcasts.
Cool. Hey, because you're drawing these comics for those guys, right? But tell me you're doing more than that.
Yeah, doing just about everything in marketing. You know, all the stuff that you'd expect. Website, lead gen, and social. Hey, ta-da.
There you go. Now, speaking of alpha technology, Zilla, you work for a company that ships alpha technology, right? In the form of Extreme.io, which we'll come to later.
So we're going to open like that, are we, Nigel? Right, we're going to open like that. I don't believe it's alpha technology. I believe that to actually make it to the future, one has to strive. I think you can get away with 20-year-old dual controller architectures and claim that by putting some form of RAID 6 on RAID 5 on disk, which is flash, but not flash, but is disk, and claim that that's the future is incorrect.
So that I think works, that, though, right?
I think sometimes you end up with a speed bump on the road to greatness. And those of us that are great carry on down the road. Those of us that do not, pull off to the hard shoulder and cry.
Meanwhile, the customers get road rash.
I don't believe the customers get road rash if you're willing to take care of them on the way there.
Well, I think we'll have a discussion about that a little later on. Moving one step further to the right, Mr. Rick Vanover.
Hey, Nigel. Hey, guys. Thanks so much for having me. This is going to be awesome, bringing the band back together and more. I'm stoked. I'm so glad we're able to light this back up.
Next on the list, HDL, Hans Dahlin here, the IT Hulk.
Hey now, I'm going to copy that one, Mark. I've been waiting for that for 2 years.
You actually have, haven't you? Because you've been pestering me. Well, not pestering me, but you've been on at me for probably a year or two now. You're going to start a podcast again. You're going to start a podcast again. So this is a good day for you, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think one of the last InfoSmack podcasts was the two of us for something that HP announced. And I mean, it was something that I missed having you in the community as a podcaster. So looking forward to this gig again.
It's going to be big fun.
I think so, yeah. Last but not least, Gabriel Chapman.
Hey now. Is that what we're going to start with all the time? The big hey now? Really excited to be part of this illustrious group of technorati. And very excited to be part of a podcast that I see having a great amount of potential. So thanks for having me on board.
Cool. So let's talk about the podcast real quick then, because I don't know, I think it's going to evolve over time probably. The idea is to probably have maybe 30 minutes of technical content every week where we talk about stuff that's in the news, yeah? Enterprise tech stuff, yeah? And looking at the list of people that we've got in front of us, you know, us as a group, we're not going to be able to avoid storage. But we've got cloud, we've got virtualization. I think we've got everything that is enterprise technology. And so a weekly show, 30 minutes talking about what's cool in the news of enterprise tech. And then we'll probably round off each show with a couple of segments that are a bit more lighthearted. Mark, do you want to give us a quick teaser of your kind of segment that we're going to run with at the end of today's show?
Well, you know, being at Microsoft until recently, I took the plunge when I got there and I bought a Windows phone. I had a Windows phone for about 18 months and it was grueling. I know some of you said, what happened to Mark? How come you're not on Twitter? How come you're not doing this stuff anymore? Well, you know, it was quite an impediment trying to do anything on the Windows phone. I'll just say that. So, and that's an excuse, of course. The problem is, a guy like me goes into a big company like Microsoft, he can't say anything without getting his balls shot off. Can I say that here? Because I couldn't say it there.
Sorry, I'm going to shoot your balls off for that. Yeah. You're off the show.
I know, I feel like Aaron Delp. But, So, Aaron, and that's a happy wave to you. The, you know, just frustrating time with a Windows phone. So I started a little segment on secret Windows phone apps. And it's just, you know, so you'll hear it at the end of the show, and I'll do these periodically. And hopefully, you know, other guys will come up with little audio skits that they'll do. But you'll see it. Hopefully that will keep things a little bit light.
Aren't Windows apps by default hidden and secret?
Yes.
I think probably when we've done your segment at the end, Mark, we maybe take a couple of minutes to talk about Windows and Windows Phone and the Windows Store and how that's all fragmented, because obviously Windows as an operating system is enterprise technology. The Windows Phone itself, probably a bit more on the consumer side, which we're not going to touch on so much, but maybe worth a conversation later on. You know what? I didn't give an intro to myself, so yeah, I'm Nigel Poulton, right? I'm a freelance consultant in the UK, and you know, I'm having a bunch of fun writing Linux training videos for a company called Pluralsight. And you know what I like about it, and I'm going to come back to you here a second, Farley, is that it's not the same as like the, you know, those kind of video mock-ups you used to do and probably still do from time to time. But when I'm creating these videos for this company I'm working for, I kind of feel like I can be really creative, you know, and that's kind of a pretty cool thing. Do you have a load of fun doing those comics and those video scribe things that you sometimes do?
Yeah, no kidding. It's great work when you can get it. Congratulations, Nigel. It's really a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not doing cool stuff like that. It's still kind of dry technical stuff, but the ability to be creative, I'm kind of liking that. It's better than a 9-to-5 at a hedge fund. I'll give you that.
We need more of that in technology. The creative element that we all really deep down have, we all have to find our ways. And sometimes we have to go outside of our day job to find that. And cheers to you, Nigel, for finding it on the side, and others find their way.
Cool, yeah. Well, it's working for the time being. We'll see how long it lasts. Well, you know what? It gives me the time to do these podcasts and the editing and stuff as well. So hey-ho for that. Let's get on to some enterprise technology news, though. Gabriel, you pointed something out earlier today that the cloud wars really seem to be heating up. We had HP making a strategic, we hope, acquisition last week, and then something out of Cisco today.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, this week the big thing was, well, one, HP picked up Eucalyptus, which is, as others have pointed out, somewhat odd, given that Martin Mikos over there was not a big fan of OpenStack, and how, you know, with the HP Helion, or Hellion, which would have been such a much better name than Helion.
But, well, you know, hold on a second. I'm going to throw the red flag in here. Why would you call it Hellion over Helion? Where's the hell?
It's
OpenStack adoption.
But no, I don't get that. You got to have to defend yourself to me here, buddy, because you know I'm a fan of HP as it is. But I just want to know if Helion is giving people jip, I'd like to hear what it is, and I think listeners would too. Don't worry, I'm not going to be a regular host. You'll have a much smoother show.
you know what? I mean, like, you know, if we had pretty much everybody in the ecosystem themselves come out and say $1 billion, you know, with their little finger pointed to their mouth, like Dr. Evil there, to basically come out with their, you know, their adoption, their push towards the OpenStack community. You know, at OpenStack Summit this year, I mean, it was just the overriding dominance was the big boys have come to play. IBM came in. HP came in with their announcements. Cisco has come out with theirs as well. In fact, with them just purchasing, you know, making the announcement today that they're going to purchase MetaCloud. You know, no word on price yet. You know, and how that interacts with their inner cloud strategy, which, you know, ties together AWS and Google and Azure and a few others. It's an interesting space that the legacy dinosaur companies are starting to rush into. And I'm not quite sure what to make of it yet. I'm not sure what exactly the ecosystem and the customers are going to make of it with everybody rushing in here when OpenStack adoption is still nascent.
Yeah, the thing with the legacy dinosaur companies, I love when I hear that, especially people say it to me and you realize these companies do a bazillion dollars in revenue and you're usually hearing it from a startup which may never make money. Which I always find hilarious. But you are correct. Even from my own view about OpenStack adoption, it is the people with the largest megaphone are the largest companies. It is moved beyond the small companies doing interesting things. But what I'm also always interested in is what level of changes are actually going back into the community. So I don't know in that case if we actually look at, and when you come to, you talk about HP, you talk about Cisco, and you talk about Bluemix, how, when they start making their own customizations to run their own business, there's always the question, how many generations until what they have looks nothing like what the project looks like, and how do they resolve that? That's an interesting thing to me.
Zilla, I know that if you look at least couple of months ago, if you were looking at the kind of companies that were making the most commits into OpenStack and things like that, it was Red Hat and HP were kind of leading the way. And at least a couple of months ago when I was at Discover, HP was saying, well, they've got this kind of community version of their cloud platform where they take the vanilla OpenStack, they contribute to that code and they give it back to the community. But their commercial product, they'll probably make some tweaks there that they don't give back to the community, but I don't think that they can really fork that far off. If you think about OpenStack as a bit like Linux, in that anybody can contribute to it and it's for the greater good, if you fork too far off, you're going to end up having your own product there, and then the mainline product that is OpenStack that's out there in the community that's got everybody else developing against it, if you like some of the features that they bring there, you can't then automatically put it into your commercialized product, right?
Well, if you look at like Amazon, which is still like, if you were to add all the OpenStack public clouds together, there still wouldn't be a fraction, fraction Amazon is, or Google or someone like that. Maybe, I won't say they started with open source code, but they wrote a hell of a lot of their own, but there's no way they're going to be merging into OpenStack. So yes, it does keep the advantage to keep make sure you keep a level of parity, but I just think in day-to-day operation, the shortcut is always there. It's always in the back of your mind. You don't have to contribute the code back if you choose not to, and before you know it, you could end up with a hairball.
You can. I personally don't think that would be a good option for HP there. Can I just back up just a quick bit? So we've got Cisco announcing their intent to acquire MetaCloud, yeah? And these guys are what? They're a private cloud player, OpenStack as a service, something like that?
It is. It's more like a private cloud as, you know, cloud as a service. We'll see how that shakes out. Like I said, I think that there's a lot of interesting, you know, synergy that could possibly come about with much more so than I would say the Eucalyptus purchase, right? Because that seems to be something that was almost competitive. And, you know, the general word is that, you know, from what I hear from discussing with others, and, you know, I heard it on Speaking in Tech and a few others, they were talking more about that was an acquisition of talent more so than the code base itself, where MetaCloud is I think that will probably end up being the opposite, right? They're looking to bring in expertise and technology and information that they've brought, or intellectual property. It remains to be seen how these big pushes from the major companies start to shake out, and what product and what the shape of that product looks like when it actually comes to market.
Hey, look, I totally get, right, that $100 million for a company like HP is like just a drop in the ocean, right? But on the flip side, $100 million just for the acquisition of talent. I mean...
No. There's also the technical partnership with Amazon as the back-end cloud here is pretty important. If you look at this combination, this technical partnership with Amazon and the connection to it is an alternative to VMware hybrid clouds for HP.
Yeah, but wouldn't they have to port that code into OpenStack or into Helion to be able to leverage it? If they do that, will that be contributed back to the community?
I'd agree with Hans, right? It is the AWS connection here, right, to span the clouds. Around that, Eucalyptus probably were probably moving the OpenStack direction anyway because they had no choice. When you actually look, when you talked about distributions, especially around OpenStack and adoption and so on, they were really trailing the field. So if to survive, they would have been looking to do more there anyway. I think what they get to do is they get to do it now. They get to do it in private. $100 million for HP, it isn't a drop in the ocean. You consider that HP has $17 billion in long-term debt, right? So $100 million, you know, that's interest rates are low, but they're not that low, right? So $100 million is big for anyone. There was numerous rounds. The company's been around for a bit. They probably did a hell of a job selling the company because Mikos did the same thing when he was selling MySQL to Sun. He managed to get a hell of a number there. And there's no sign, well, you know, unless Oracle buy HP, which could happen. but I do think, to go to Hans' point, that the Amazon work there on the back is you can't buy time, right? You can't buy time, and I think Eucalyptus have spent the time with their Amazon connection. HP are going to exploit that.
But how do they get that into Helion? And is that the route that they have to take? Do they have to then add those hooks into Helion?
I'd say possibly. I'd say that's probably the case. And no, they don't have to. If they choose not to, they do not have to contribute that code back.
You know, it'll be curious to see what happens in Paris. You know, OpenStack Summit Paris is there coming up in early November.
November, yes.
You know, I would look for an announcement or at least something, you know, from either any of the other players who are coming into this space that have just got recent acquisitions. You know, you'll see something in November at OpenStack Summit. It's just around the corner.
So sticking with cloud briefly then, we mentioned earlier that OpenStack, when you compare it to the Goliath that is Amazon Web Services, are there any other big players out there? Are the likes of Google and Microsoft Azure, are they serious contenders out there?
Absolutely.
Oh, definitely.
Yes.
I mean, you look at the disposable income that Microsoft has at their, you know, at their disposal, right? They don't have... you know, they have more money than they know what to do with. If they want to go full force and go head to head against Amazon or even Google, they have the means and wherewithal to do it. Much more so than Amazon, who, you know, I don't remember who said it, but somebody said something like, in order for Amazon to even register their AWS cloud service as part of their income statement, it had to be more than 5% of revenue, and it's not.
Mm. Really?
Yeah, well, Amazon has massive revenue anyway. What they don't have is profitability because they pretty much take every penny that they might earn, invest it back into the business, and don't return anything to shareholders or hold anything in cash. But the whole point, it was 2008, 2009, it was an internal EMC thing, and it was Paul Moritz got up on stage and said, look, it's only a matter of time before Microsoft and Google realize they can use their cash balances to do massive damage to Amazon, because they're just throwing off money left, right, and center, maybe not from the Xbox division and anything that isn't display advertising that Google is doing, but they can simply take this massive river of money they have and use it to crush Amazon. And I think they're doing that. I think Google are now offering people $100,000. Did I see? They're offering a credit of some ridiculous number in Google Compute Engine Services if your startup meets their criteria and you run for a year on Google Compute Engine. So they'll give you some ridiculous amount of money in services which you can use in bandwidths, compute, storage, etc., etc., in the hope that they'll draw people who will then stay. Can you imagine, like, they're giving away, here's $100,000's worth of infrastructure.
What are we doing making a podcast? We should be making a company and putting it on Google.
That's Let's make a cloud, yeah.
What we need is an iOS app, because Android customers are cheap as fuck and don't buy anything, right? So we need an iOS app, and we need a cloud strategy, and we're good to go, $100,000.
All we need is a strategy.
You know what, though? I don't think Microsoft have a great track record recently of actually being able to deliver things that people want. And yeah, so if they went down the Google route of giving people stuff for free for a while, would those customers stick around at the end? Because it's not like that now, but for the longest time with Hyper-V, people were saying, you couldn't give me that stuff for free.
Yeah. So the thing about Microsoft, though, now is that you've got a real DevOps guy running the company instead of a buffoon, right? I think, you know, over the next 6, 12, 18 months, you're going to really start to see the difference that Satya Nadella makes in that company and the offerings that they have. I think between Scott Guthrie, who's now running the cloud, well, Satya had been, but there's a lot of juice behind cloud efforts at Microsoft, and I think they're directed in the right way. They have a lot of money to spend, and they have somebody that really wants to drive it instead of just scream at people.
The technologists are back in control. You know, the people who have vision other than, you know, who knows what Ballmer was going to do. It seemed like that message never seemed to resonate with the rank and file, and it seemed like everybody seemed to be happy once he left.
So giving away Azure would never work. Let me tell you why, guys. Azure is built on a lot of things, including, most importantly, applications people use. SQL Server, web services. For data centers today, it is too easy to make that decision to leverage Azure. They'll never do it for free because they don't need to. Google, Amazon, these others, it's a much harder transition to go to app models, app constructs that are a learning curve. That's a material difference, because the applications are native for businesses today. I think that's cannot be underemphasized.
Could you draw the parallel to the content providers in the, you know, the video space online? You know, Amazon looking to buy content that they're going to provide, Netflix creating their own content. You know, it's content seems to be king with a lot of these cloud-based solutions. If the natural parallel would be the application becomes king.
Cool. On that topic, though, of saying that Azure has things like SQL Server and stuff that we're all used to using, do we think that startups that are coming around these days are looking to use those kind of traditional enterprise apps?
I'll tell you who is, because I've seen this happen, because I've been in the room when this happens. The Microsoft sales rep will come in usually when a customer is re-upping whatever their enterprise licensing plan is, and they'll say something like, you know what, you're paying X amount, you're doing that, you're using SharePoint, you're doing whatever it is. How about I reduce that price and you use SharePoint in Azure? How about I reduce that price and you use SQL Server in Azure? How about you take all the data that you'd use for long-term archival and you put that into the Blob Store? And that's what they're doing. They're just coming in and they're opportunistically picking things and saying, we'll do something in your pricing structure. And you have enterprises, traditional enterprises are their customers. Going after startups, Microsoft, very difficult sell to go after startups. But if you're out there and you're a chemical company, or you're working in the medical field, or you're creating toothpaste, right? They'll come into you in your Microsoft shop and they'll say, what's your landscape look like? Let's do something with pricing. And how about you start using our cloud a bit more?
Yeah, fair enough. And I totally get that with existing companies. They're already bought into those traditional applications, but yeah, I don't see it for the startups.
For the startups, it's the case. It's like, oh, we want you to develop for Windows RT, right? And that's pretty much the Azure sale that they got going. Mark might think I'm wrong, but I do think Google stand a better chance, because Google will get up in the morning and on a whim say, I believe all this stuff should be priced in line with Moore's Law. And you have Amazon, who the bulk of their margin probably comes from something like S3, right? I think they make an absolute fortune in points for Amazon, in margin points from something like S3. And suddenly that becomes a problem when Google believe that, well, Moore's Law, we're following Moore's Law in pricing. Because Google
So it's interesting at Quadrasoft where we're using the Google Cloud environment for, you know, docs, sharing data, that kind of stuff, right? We each use Windows applications, or not all of us, but, you know, we share stuff through the Google Drive. We've talked about switching over to Office 365, and it seems like there are some advantages there, but there are disadvantages also. It's like, well, some of these things work really well, but then you have to use this, or this gets in your way, right? And it's sort of like the Klingons, what, of the Microsoft environment keep you from going there as a small company.
Cool. Can we switch tracks a bit now? Zilly, you've had a lot to say so far, so I want to put you in the firing line here. Just this last few days, there's been kind of a storm brewing over Extreme.io, and I was going to call it a disruptive upgrade, but potentially a destructive upgrade. So the way I see this, and anybody chime in here, right? But
yeah, anybody pile on, right?
I'll take dog pile on the MCE.
I will take you all, even though I work in the data protection space. Thanks for the heads up on this, but I'm going to deal with it anyway because I've been like General Zod in primary storage. I'm in the Phantom Zone looking out as these wars go on. But
well,
go
you're in the
ahead,
data protection
Nigel.
Space, so you get to back everything up and restore it.
Yeah, which is why I have, and as well as that, I also sell recovery. Point, which makes, you know, real-time clones. So go ahead, Nigel.
Yeah, so look, it looks very, very much to me like EMC have just pushed out a half-baked solution into the market in Extreme.io. There seems to be like a long checklist of things that it doesn't do, and almost like you're using your customers as lab rats in some respects. I mean, for a customer to have bought an Extreme.io system and to be running the 2.4 code, and then to say, hey, if you want to upgrade to the 3 code, which, you know, according to some sources at EMC, gives you 2 times the performance and 2 to 4 times the storage capacity, hey, guess what? To do that, you've got to get all of your data off the system, so evict all of that data, back it up, whatever, which has its risks, okay? And then shut the box down, flash the code, and then copy all of that data back. I mean, that just sucks, right?
Well, I put it this way. It isn't like if anyone was to come into me and say, if you want to go to the 3.0 code and beyond, and this is what we're talking about. Let's keep this in mind. It's a .0 release. You shouldn't, I know, regardless of who the vendor is, running to .0s, if you've ever been an administrator, you need a damn good reason, right? So I'm just going to put that out there and leave it stand on its own. And
but 3.1 is going to be the same, right? You're not suddenly going to say, well, but to go to 3.1 from 2.4 is non-disruptive.
Going to be on every single upgrade. This is a major upgrade. It is. I mean, it's working on the fundamentals of the system, being the block size, the page sizes, and they're changing that. I get it why it is destructive. I just cannot accept it that it's the second time in the first year of GA.
And it's practically
that's
a
what
new
that's
product,
what just
right?
not acceptable. It's just that they've had the basic so the reason for the destructive upgrade is correct. I mean, you cannot do it any way else. However, being necessary to do it twice in the same year in your first year of GA really means that you do have an immature product in the market.
Yeah, it shouldn't have shipped without key decisions like this already being nailed down, right?
But I will say, I mean, I thought Chad laid it out in very good terms in his blog post on the reasons why. I also think that it's, you know, not every customer has to do this upgrade. Right, I think that they can wait and take a wait and see approach. I mean, unless there's a fundamental change in the underlying, there is a fundamental change in the underlying architecture of the platform. But do you, as a customer, need to do this tomorrow?
Wait and see till when, Gabe? Are you going to stick on 2.4? For this is a new product. This is something you bought in less than 12 months ago. Right. If you had a 1.0, you're even further away. You already have done that thing once. I mean,
you are not going to stick on 2.4 on a new product.
You will not. I mean, this is a product you bought for at least 5 years to go on your primary tier one applications.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like it's in some crappy data protection division of the company where you can turn that kit off all the time, right?
Oh, no, no, no. Don't go there.
No, I'm just kidding.
Oh my God. Should not have done that. I sell some of the greatest products in the entire storage industry, and I make more money in a week than the flash providers put together.
You know what, Zilla? I agree with that, and that's one of the things that annoys me, right? I think customers will look at Extreme.io and making this switch to an all-flash platform, right, internally for some companies is quite a difficult transition to make. It's new tech. You've got to get your DBAs on board, everybody like that. You know, these guys have got systems that are used to running on spinning disk, and you say, I'm going to bring in something that's pretty revolutionary in the enterprise tech industry, in the storage industry. But don't worry about it, guys. It's got the EMC badge on it. So it's backed up by... Look, I'm not an EMC lover or a hater, but it's backed up by a world-class organization. Nobody gets sacked for buying EMC, right? So by me saying, hey, I can introduce this really innovative and forward-thinking technology into the organization, it's going to make our lives better, but I mitigate the risks by the fact that I'm buying it from EMC, right? So, and then they land you with this. Guys.
Nigel, what's the alternative? There's two alternatives, and there are two historical alternatives. One is recent. Cisco holds Invicta for sale right now just because there's implementation issues. That's one alternative. You just pull and you wait and you see, what do we have to do? And they say they're going to be back in a few weeks or months. So that's one alternative. You do nothing. The second alternative is the strategy that Equalogic had for years, as in, we will never change our basic code, as everything will be backwards compatible, which left us after 6 or 7 years in history using Equalogic with still having 15 or 16 megabyte page sizes that had big increments on every single snapshot you made. It was that good decision, as in keeping with your codes and making everything backwards compatible. But it gives you other. So what do they have to do? They want to go from that 4K to 8K. I don't even know if that's a good decision, yes or no. But if you want to do that decision, when do you do it? Do you make the decision, or do you leave it on the table?
Come on, you got to make those decisions before it goes GA, right?
That's first, Nigel. We can decide who should have done what, when they should have done it. No product comes out the door as a perfect snowflake, and everyone ends up living with their flaws. But if I get a right to reply, which will be great now that you've all vented your spleen, should this be happening? Absolutely not, right? It isn't a case where a disruptive upgrade, there's no one wants to come out to the markets where you decide and you go, okay, if you want to move forward, we have to go with a disruptive upgrade. That shouldn't have happened. It has. The reality is that it has happened. It is the right decision to make for the future, and we will remediate in whatever way is required with customers to make sure they get on to 3.0 and move forward beyond this with all the resources that we have available to us. That's pretty much that's the only thing we can do. I mentioned already, we have RecoverPoint available as a physical appliance, virtual appliance, how the people, and that's real time. So every change that gets written to the Extreme.io will in turn be written to some form of swing device, I'd expect. I'm just guessing here because I have not had time to look into this issue at all. It will be your live transactions, and then you can perform a quick cutover, do your upgrades, and then go back the other direction. Desirable, you know, it is a data protection scheme. It's probably better than backing up your system, writing it to a load of bloody tape, which you shouldn't be doing anyway because tape sucks. If you want to do it to a data domain system, absolutely support you right there.
And you'll sell them one.
I put it this way. In this case, I don't know how they're putting it together, but if it comes to backup and recovering systems for customers, I don't know exactly what the offering is there, but I presume that RecoverPoint is the best, most effective and fastest way to do that. And I don't expect that. Well, I don't know how they're structuring that, but it's something I've done because I've been an administrator. I've decommissioned gear. I've done it in that fashion. It is quick. right? So should this have happened? Absolutely not. This, now, from reading Chad's blog, which I had a quick skim of, you know, between when you mentioned this in the opening and to right now, it appears that this is it. This is the final one. Now, this should be the final bloody one. But the thing is that if customers are finding it a bad situation, it's up to EMC, it's up to their rep, it's up to their SE, it's up to their support team to make this to get beyond this as smooth as possible, as quickly as possible. And I expect nothing less than EMC to do that for their customers. Your hands is right. You're right. You bought the box a year ago. It's my responsibility and the rest of EMC's responsibility to make sure that you get to this next level that we're presenting, and we move on from that as quickly as possible. I don't expect anyone who's bought a box within the last 12 months or whatever they're doing, and again, I don't know how they're structuring this together so I could get a goddamn email from people saying I'm fired tomorrow morning, but I'd expect that EMC are going to support this right way through, do what is required and move on. And this isn't, and the flash market as well, this isn't a huge market. We're not talking about 250,000 systems or whatever the number is out there. It's a growing customer base, rapidly growing, but it's a growing customer base. And I expect each of those to be treated incredibly well by EMC during this upgrade process. That's pretty much all I can say.
I get that, Mark. This is now speaking about the existing customers. I do hope at least that they get treated like they should, and it's probably going to involve some services and not going to be entirely free, but it's going to be solved somehow. I mean, it's not that it's not backwards compatible, it's that you need new code in the same hardware. I get that. Now, the other question is, if this is for existing customers, how about new customers? If I have been looking at Xtreme.io for the last weeks and maybe months, I probably am backing down now for at least half a year to a year minimum.
Buy a SolidFire instead.
I'm not saying going to buy something. I mean, everyone actively looking at Xtreme.io right now, they're going to back down. This is the worst PR you can have.
Well, it's bad PR. It's bad PR. It's bad PR, but they're coming out with a much better system.
It's happened to every storage company.
Yeah, it's, look, I think in our industry, data loss is the worst PR, right? Data loss is the worst PR. If your box is actively losing data, I think that's incredible PR. What this is that if to move people to the next generation of software, because obviously with the changes that they've made, just reading through it, they've made substantial changes on the inside. This is going to require an evacuation of data followed by a restore of data. People say this is risky. Being in the data protection space, I don't believe it's risky, because if you do it correctly, I believe it's risky if you do it incorrectly and don't know what you're doing. And I say that as a data protection professional, because all data protection is nothing more than versioned replication. So if you understand versioned replication, you'll be able to get through with this. But for net new customers, I would prefer net new customers, especially starting 3.0 than on 2.4, obviously, from what I've read.
But a 3.0 version, we were just saying earlier, you've got to be nuts to go to a .0, right?
That's the usual case anyway. I think you have to be nuts to go to a 1.0, and we had people do that as well. Right, so it comes down to need. There are going to be people who look at an Xtreme.io system and decide that what they actually need is that guaranteed low latency. They don't give a damn about anything else. I think you're going to have customers who are going to say, I'm going to run it for 4 years, 5 years on the 2.4 code because I don't care, right? Because they're just getting that one thing that they bought it for in the first place. I think for richer data services, you're going to have to go 3 and beyond.
So I'm not trying to make excuses for anybody here, but I think part of this has to do with the fact that Xtreme.io was an acquisition. And there was probably a lot of pressure on the Xtreme.io engineering group and marketing group, whatever, to try to bring this product to market. And things, you know, I give EMC a lot of credit for the way they've managed acquisitions over the years. You know, every company struggles with that sort of thing. I think EMC has done very well. So they got this product out. They got it wrong. You know, at some point, you know, I'm not sure who the product manager is on this. They must have been incredibly squished between competing wishes. You know, usually you got sales beating down the door. We need this product. maybe something wasn't ready to go with a large, you know, and maybe not all the issues were understood by everybody involved. I mean, I've seen that stuff happen on the inside. So it came out. It was a mistake, but I can certainly understand how it could happen, especially in an environment where you've got a new team coming into a big company like EMC.
Well, there's also a desire there to get something into the marketplace, and when, especially when there's so many startups in the space, and especially within Flash, that are stealing thunder, stealing market share for specific product lines, you have to do a little protection. Sometimes getting something out there that's not the perfect product or not even fully baked is better than getting nothing out. And there's a command decision made somewhere in the deep within the bowels of every organization on how much risk are we taking by doing this prematurely and fixing it later down the road. I think as long as the organization, you know, the company, whoever it is, because every storage company has had an issue like this for the most part, or something close to it. As long as you make the right decision when it comes to making sure the customer is taken care of, you know, who's going to remember this? I mean, how many people remember, you know, some of the issues with NetApp or even some of the stuff with Clarion? That's kind of like, you know, it's ancient history. It's still there. It still bubbles up every now and then within, you know, the geeks like us who talk about this. But the vast majority of customers, you know, they say, hey, I have a support contract. You're going to take care of me. I'll be okay.
My one concern, and I'll let you in a second, is just from this, is that, yeah, you make your, you go through these things in public, right, in the light of day. At what point do people stop saying that that the product is immature? Is it a year from now when we've had... It's, you know, it's like you're seeing this evolve in real time. So does it have to be 10 years old by the time people go, yeah?
So I think I can answer that, Mark, but I just want to go back to what Gabriel said there, that, you know, they've made a decision to get there into the market, into the all-flash array market early-ish, okay? But totally at the expense of their customers. If I was a customer that had bought this, I have got an awful conversation to have with, well, I was going to say my boss, probably my boss's boss's boss, to say, hey, guess what? I'm the guy who recommended that we bring in this Extreme IO product. And because it's Extreme IO, there's a pretty good chance I'm going to be running a mission critical 24/7 app on it, maybe multiple. And now I have to say, yeah, you know what? We've got this big old piece of work. And I get, Zilla, okay, that you say, you know, backing up and restoring data and using RecoverPoint, it's safe as houses. But with a mission-critical Tier 1 app, I'm an IT guy, right? I go and talk to the application owner in the business. He is going to go mental at me.
This will sound incredibly glib, and I don't mean to say it that way, but if you have a mission-critical Tier 1 app while you're running it on one storage array, right? I don't mean to be incredibly glib saying that. But it is the case that when you're talking people who are running Oracle or something, they have DataGuard on, they have Rack on, there's probably a second array there as well. They'll be able to take the hit of a failover because it's expected. They expect the hardware and compute will vanish on me.
No, a mission-critical Tier 1 app, even if I've got HA, for me to say I'm going to take one leg of that HA away, the application owner is still going to roast me. What? While we run the upgrade, you want me to run on one leg? You know, you want the application to be exposed? That's an awkward discussion to have.
It is an awkward discussion to have. It's also an awkward discussion.
And at a certain point, running it on two different codes at the same time.
Well, it's at a certain, you don't necessarily, yes, right? When you go back on the other side, you could end up on two different codes at the same time. But if things are working the way they should be working, and this is, we know about technology, it's part of any upgrade when you have two different, if you have two different storage arrays in the mix. If you're upgrading one and then you haven't upgraded the other yet,
yeah,
when you're moving back, you're going to end up in the same position. It is an awful conversation to have with your application owners. I do believe that. It is a case, though, it's a conversation where you're saying, I'm taking a voluntary outage on these resources, right? And at the end of that, here's what else I'm going to offer you because we're doing that. So I've done this myself. I was an administrator for many, many, many years in the Unix and Linux space. and I was doing it on hardware, which was much less user friendly than what we have today. But the it is a case. It's not a nice conversation, but it's a necessary conversation. And I, again, more things coming out of my own division. I mean, we Vplex, right, for active operation is there's an awful lot of that goes out the door with Extreme.io as well as other flash vendors, which I shan't name. But the encapsulation with Vplex is a lot of stuff we do there for active. But what more can I say than that? It has happened. It's not that it's going to happen. It has happened. 3.0 is real. It is there is a data evacuation required, and we'll do our utmost to make that better. And I take your points. I take all your points. I'm not writing off any of your feedback. But the plan. But the plan, which is, I would tell you if I was writing off any of your feedback, right? I reject your concept. You should see me in engineering meetings. But the thing is that it's 3.0 and beyond. That's where we want to take customers to 3.0 and beyond.
Fair enough. Should we all back off him now?
Yeah, about 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, I do this all night because I've no problem having these discussions with people because I actually enjoy technology and I enjoy stick time, right? Actually getting into the bowels of technology. But yeah, that's that.
We could banish him to the People's Republic of Scotland.
You know what? I don't need to banish me anywhere because I live in Ireland and happy to be here. God's country, as I like to refer to it as. But Scotland, looking at the polls, I don't think that's going to become, from the final poll, that's not going to become an independent country. You won't have to worry about that. I think fear is always a great motivator. And there's too much fear-mongering, especially looking at the media over here, that your world will end simply because you might get your own flag, which I don't think is the case.
Yeah, I'm more concerned about whether or not you wear pants to engineering meetings.
I absolutely do wear pants to engineering meetings, and I make sure I'm one of the best-dressed people there.
Hang on a sec, I've seen the way that you dress.
There you go. You're dealing with proper developers now, aren't you?
Yeah, you were wearing red jeans last time I saw you in London, I'm sure.
Yeah, I was. And I presented to a room of, what, 80, 90 people?
Yeah.
And I was good, wasn't I?
You weren't bad.
Fans of Liverpool.
Yeah. So shall we change the tone now? And I don't know, should we play the secret Windows phone app?
Well, I don't know. I thought we were going to talk about Extent.
Extent? Oh, yeah. So I think another feature that we kind of probably want to add into shows going forward is doing a review of films or TV shows, yeah? Tell me if you think I'm wrong here. Do techie people get drawn towards certain types of films and TV shows? You know, things that, I don't want to say Star Trek, right?
I do. Or, Star Trek's awesome.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, no, absolutely.
Definitely, totally.
But there's a kind of genre of films and TV shows that attract techie people, yeah?
I think we like gear, right? We like gear. And I will say probably one of the best scenes in a show that I actually saw, which was tech accurate, was years ago in an episode of The X-Files where they were looking at some CCTV footage on videotape and Mulder said, it's no good enhancing this or blowing it up because the data simply wasn't captured.
Yeah.
And in every goddamn procedural crime show you see these days, they can simply zoom in and enhance that. And all of a sudden, they're reading the numbers that like some guy wrote in his hand or something like that. And you're going, you idiots. But you go back to a show like the X-Files where Mulder, just off the cuff, says it's no good blowing this up. The data wasn't captured.
Yeah, you know, the X-Files was a classic show. Oh, yes.
I mean, we could talk about a lot of these, right? You know, Twilight Zone was out there. There's Outer Limits. All these old shows. So Extant is just, you know, part of that whole heritage of sci-fi shows on TV.
So is anybody on the show watching Extant? Are you watching it, Farley?
Well, I've seen a few episodes. Yeah, not the same as you have. I've seen, I think, the first three. I record them all, though. They're all on my set-top box.
Never to be watched, right?
No. As soon as I have a week by myself.
Okay, fair play. So I'm watching Extant at the moment. I think I'm about 2 episodes behind. I'll tell you what I think's quite cool about it, that it's available for Amazon Prime on instant streaming, which I think is pretty cool. But it's a show that appeals to me as a techie, and I think probably appeals to a bunch of other techies. So stepping back a little bit, the idea of these reviews is to review shows and films that we think will appeal to techies, and maybe even give them a rating on their technical content. So we could say something that's just got a little bit of technical content is universal, and something that's got moderate amount of technical content is a PG-13, and something that's just full-on technical content, technology on display throughout the show, we give that an R rating.
Yeah, would techies require a battle card to actually see that? Oh yeah, that is a reasonable amount of tech. What does universal mean? I need to look it up. I'll go to Wikipedia.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, this is a full-on R show then.
I would say so, yeah. So the premise is, well, it's got Halle Berry, and that's a good start.
Yeah, I was about to ask whether or not the bulk of your rating comes from the fact that it's Halle Berry.
Some of it, yeah.
No question. You know, when she's in her astronaut suit especially, and it's not bulky, yeah. We'll say
oh
that.
My God, this is why women can't in technology. No, go on.
Oh, a little bit like Seven of Nine from one of the Star Trek series.
Yeah, one of the awful Star Trek series called Voyager.
Yeah, that's the one.
I pretty much, like, things after Deep Space Nine, it got a bit rocky for me, right, when it came to Star Trek.
Yeah. But to Extant, right, so she's been in space for 13 months and she comes back and she's pregnant, but she was on a solo mission, yeah? And the idea is that the baby is some kind of human alien hybrid. I think that angle's been done before, but it's really well produced show. It's not, I don't know, it's not a cheap show. That they've gone, I think, full on with the cast.
Well, it's Halle Berry, it's CBS,
it's
isn't it?
Spielberg.
Yeah, it's
Steven Spielberg is the executive producer.
Right,
and
there
so
you, go.
You know, there's going to be a certain level of polish.
Yeah.
I mean, you can go
so
back
like
to
Falling
AI.
Skies.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this isn't Hackers, and there's no Gibson. I mean, this is, you know, I think they're trying to take an approach with it. And I'm, now that you guys are talking about it, I'm probably going to go down and binge watch the first couple episodes, because actually I had not even heard of the show. So, there goes my tech cred.
The thing is that my tech cred will go when I use the DVR, right, because streaming really doesn't exist here. But the thing is, I turn around, and because I travel a lot, just a bit, you end up programming the DVR and you come back and then you find like you have 20 episodes or something. Like you're back and it's a choice between doing your laundry or something like that, or just throwing on a couple of episodes, and if it hits, you'll just churn through them.
I'm not going to do a spoiler alert here, I don't think, too much, because it's a stream that runs through the whole show, but Halle Berry's in this relationship with this guy who develops, you know, android kids. Right, or you know, robotic, lifelike, right. Human-like kids, right? And so you've got kids that are maybe space aliens and android kids and human kids and all this stuff. I mean, this has the potential to be the biggest sci-fi Partridge Family ever.
Yeah, I mean, it's set in space half of the show as well. It's in the future, so it's got cool tech on display all the time. I'd say from my perspective, I'd recommend people watch it. I don't think, for me, the plot isn't earth-shattering yet, but it seems to be building up. So for me, it gets a thumbs up. And, you know, if you like techie-type shows, I'd definitely recommend it.
So that's their no. What techie show maybe might you not have... It didn't last. You liked it. It was never picked up. Is there anything that stands out as a show that was you believe was didn't get the respect it deserved and was cancelled before its time?
Yeah. There was one that... Oh. You put me on the spot now. There was... See, I think there's a lot of great content comes out of the States, okay? But they have this nasty, nasty habit of cancelling shows like halfway through the first series, and they're always the shows that I think are great.
Well, I can think of one, Mark, that you and I both like, which was Threshold.
Yeah, that's the one, yeah.
Yeah, Threshold, that was good. There was another show, Odyssey 5, that I liked, that had Peter Weller. He was an astronaut we were talking about. Mm. Astronauts, and they're in space, and the Earth is destroyed. Right. So that's the opening concept to Odyssey 5, right? The Earth is destroyed as they're looking at it. That went for a season and got cancelled. But there's a couple of things out there, all right, and it's because, especially broadcast TV, because if you're on cable, you manage to move on. I don't know if anyone's watching Halt and Catch Fire. I think that's on AMC. And it's pretty much, I've only seen an episode or two, and it's mildly interesting, but when we're talking about techies, and the Americans will know all about this because it's been on for God knows how long at this stage, but you're talking about the formation of the PC industry. Like, they're in a race to develop the BIOS. of the computer, and that's, and you've your man's father is like an executive at IBM, and come back and run our this, that, and the other division, probably something to do with mainframes. But
it was a soap opera for techies, but you know what? They did get the technology right. They also got the soundtrack right, and you know, I actually watched the first season, and there were some nice homages to the industry and the Silicon Prairie, and you know, obviously with Apple and a few others. You know, getting past the soap opera aspects of it, some of the technology discussion that they were having and some of the decisions around bringing a revolutionary or a game-changing product to market was actually kind of compelling television, right? Especially for those of us who work in the technology industry.
I do think at one stage, in one episode I saw, that pretty much the operating system that they had written was pretty much hell, and then they stripped it out because, well, our computer will go faster if we don't use it. All right. You've developed hell. People will wait.
There was a bigger discussion, I think, around building a system with a personality other than just a system that went fast. So, you know, they kind of had the discussion within that episode and another one that kind of, you know, gelled around that. As far as shows that I miss, you know, Thunderbirds are go. It didn't get any better than that when it came to technology.
Oh, my God.
God, you've just taken a shit in the driveway is the expression I'll use in this show. Thunderbirds are go. Wow. Jerry Anderson, in fairness, he had a whole bunch of shows like that, like UFO and all these things, and Fireball XL and Joe 90, right? Where you'd be able to program, which was child abuse really, because the child was used as like a scientific guinea pig. Oh, today we'll make you a spy. Step into this machine. I'll expose you to radiation. We know how that worked out for Bill Bixby in The Incredible Hulk. And Bill Bixby, his classic show, The Magician. Because Bill Bixby was into magic, you'll actually find the intro to this on YouTube. He was an amateur magician himself, so he decided he wanted a television show where he was a magician that used to travel the world solving crimes. But I don't know why, but he had a private jet and everything, so obviously he was on Copperfield money.
Yeah, weekends at the Mirage.
Cool. Well, there we go, guys. I think that's plenty of chat about TV shows that should appeal to the tech-minded people. Should we fade out with your sketch, Mark?
Oh, if you want to, sure.
It's rock and roll.
Hello, this is Mark Farley, and you're listening to Secret Windows Phone Apps. Today, we're going to be talking about a new Secret Windows Phone app that turns your Windows Phone into a bottle opener, so you can use it for drinking beer or soda pop. First, you need a roll of black duct tape, because most Windows phones are black. And it wouldn't be a secret app if you could tell because the duct tape was a different color. But if you have a different colored phone, like the yellow Windows phone, you could try Scotch Duct Tape Sunshine Yellow. Or if you have a red Windows phone, you could try Scotch Duct Tape Cherry Red. Check out all the wonderful Scotch Duct Tape colors at the Scotch Duct Tape website at ducttape.scotchbrand.com. Then you take a bottle opener. Almost any kind of bottle opener will do, and you heat it up really hot on an anvil, and you smash down all the parts except for the bottle opener part, because you still need to use that, and it gets really nice and flat. Then chill it in cold water, and then pat it down nice and dry with a fluffy towel. And after it's nice and dry, you give it to your dog to put in his mouth and tell him, "Hey Fido, make a call now." And while Fido has the phone in his mouth, you put the bottle opener against it and you wrap it really tight with the duct tape. But be careful not to get his whiskers in it. Now, some people might ask, but what about the front of the phone? What about the interface? what if the duct tape blocks some of the icons that are on my phone? Well, do you really use those apps anyway? Like Yammer and Link and Office 365 for your phone? So the great thing is, now when you get a call or a tweet or a message or something like that on your Windows phone, you could take it out of your pocket and open up a beer. And instead of holding a Windows phone on the side of your head, you could be drinking a beer. And isn't that a lot more fun than trying to download a PowerPoint from OneDrive? I thought so. Tune in again to hear another episode of Secret Windows Phone Apps.
And you've been listening to Mark Farley starring as Derek Zoolander, Spielberg, Eat Your Heart Out.